Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Jan, who is here to speak with us about her experience of practicing with the recently finished topic in the year-long retreat of play. Welcome, Jan.
Thanks, Jan. Good to be here. Can you hear me okay?
I can. And ditto, you can hear me?
Yes, perfect. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Miracles never cease. So, yes, tell us, what did you see? How did you play with the topic of play in the year-long retreat?
Gosh, you know, there are so many ways, so many ways to play with it a month for a month. Well, I mentioned when I called into the to open air that I've been on a, I'm on a second bike tour, but there was an 8-day tour that my husband and I had been, and it ended up being, as I mentioned before, like a retreat, a meditation retreat, because on a bike you can't do a whole lot. I mean, you really have to pay attention. And right. So I got to see a lot, and with the focus on play, it became really obvious when play wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when I got to see the most.
Yes.
I guess I'll just say a little bit more about that. Yeah, terrific contrast. So yeah. Well, one of the things that comes to mind is we at one point made a stop to buy at a small store. We're in a very rural area, small roads and all that. And a woman there said, saw we were in our bike, you know, we were biking and was really concerned. She had a, and I know she was trying to be helpful, but, you know, mentioned about a woman who had been hit on the area we were going to be biking on. And we got back on our bike, and I just watched fear take over. And I thought, wow, this hasn't happened before. It's like I took on what she had said. And because of that contrast, again, the contrast, it was, I thought, you know what? If I were going to be hit or if I, something bad was going to happen physically, whatever, I'd want to go down happy. I'd want to, if this were the end, I'd want it to be a happy end. And I'm going happy. And I just went to that place of complete enjoyment, which allowed my body to relax, which is the safest place to be. And it was,
exactly. You know, I was just thinking that
it was wonderful. I mean, then I could have a smile on my face. But it was just so fascinating to watch that takeover. And because our practice to say, no, really, I don't want to be there. And for safety and every other reason in life, I'm gonna do a switch here. And it was also, one thing I want to mention, it was also interesting not to be able to turn to the tools right away because when you're biking, you can't really have earbuds in because you've got to be able to hear, you know, traffic and everything else. And so I had to really rely on that, on the mentor being right there all the time or as much as possible, turning to that as a practice, which was really, really, really good practice, really helpful.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And it reminds me of how we talk about, you know, it's a muscle, right? It's a practice like anything else. And when we're in the routine, the habit, there's, you know, I mean, there's not a good word for it because it's much more conscious than that. But when we're practicing regularly, that's a better word for it, then practice is there for us when we need it, even if we don't have the particular tool that we're used to turning to, right? It just kicks in. Because as you say, I mean, that was such a good example of you watch that fear come in. And I think what the kind of the real takeovers that happen for us rely on unconsciousness. The only way they can really pick up the theme, the, you know, that they need in order to really take us over, rely on us not being there as those, you know, first few pieces are being put into place. But you were right there. You saw that contrast caught your attention of, wait a minute, you know, I've been playing and this doesn't feel like play. And so let me look at the process, and I project then using all the tools. Oh, I'm believing something here.
And it also was all of those things. Right, right. It also was the body sensations. You know, I mean, when fear comes in, there are a lot of body sensations. Yeah. And that, you know, that I think was the most obvious contrast right there. And then noticing, going from that to, oh, look at these thoughts, you know, this story going through of how horrible this might be. Anyway, so as far as play, I have to say, because of our schedule, I couldn't listen live to the morning show, but I would listen to it every evening. So that was huge, having that as a, it was like having a support. It was just a tremendous support in a time when, you know, you're in a totally different environment and doing all these things and can't turn, like you were saying. You don't have the tools at hand, but you know that support is there just because it's there to listen to and it carries. I don't know about everybody else. It carries with me throughout the day.
Absolutely. And I love that piece of that I turn to it even when I'm out of my routines. So, because how easy would it be, right? I mean, you can't listen to the live show because of the schedule that you're in. And so that's okay. I'll catch up when I get home, which is fine. You know, I mean, there is that place too. But then getting to listen to the recordings in the evening, how lovely that, you know, just looking to think, well, how can it be incorporated into my current schedule?
Yeah. Oh, it was so important. It was so helpful. And I mentioned this in the radio show here, and also as far as the fun, the play part, I just, I mentioned my experience that to me was like the John Muir writing the trees in the storm. That experience, we were in a storm. It was raining cats and dogs. The wind was blowing like crazy. There was thunder.
And you were riding at the time. You were on your bike.
We were riding, yeah. And we didn't have a choice. Wow. Again, we're on rural roads, so it's not like we could take cover.
Stop at the Marriott right here. How about?
the one big advantage was it was that huge wind was behind us. So the image I got, and this is where life just came right in, and the mentor was right there. All I could think to do was sing. I mean, I didn't think. Thinking isn't even the right word. Singing just started.
Yeah.
And it was the energy, I think, that it was almost like absorbing the energy of the storm. The song came. You know, I'm just singing.
Yes.
It's like opera in a storm or something. It was incredible because the joy that represented, that I was experiencing that in this, I guess at any other time in my life I would have considered maybe not life-threatening, but dangerous, that didn't matter. And I'd always thought before on the story with John Muir, he must have been crazy. He must have been crazy to do that. And here I was in a situation. And what it is, what I got to see later is it's letting go of the mind, you know, of letting thinking go and just going to experience. And I don't know a better way to describe it, but that's what happened.
That's beautiful.
And it was
That's
it
a beautiful was, way to
beautiful.
Describe it. And it. Sorry, go ahead, Jen.
No, that was all. That was all.
Well, I mean, I just love that story so much because it's such a perfect example of how I feel like life is constantly inviting us to play. And what you did in that situation was you saw the invitation. You know, there are kind of two choices and gray areas in between, but basically it's so good to not have the physical choice. The choice was ride the bike or ride the bike. Right? I mean, there were no choices in terms of that, right? And that's so helpful because when that's taken away, then the only choice we have is on the process level. I'm either going to just completely, the word I would use is surrender and play in this, or I'm going to resist and hate it and or be scared or whatever, you know, the form of resistance might take. And to have those glorious experiences where by the grace of whatever, we do let go and play, to me, it models for us, I think, what's possible for us in every moment to play with everything exactly as it is.
Yeah. Well, that's what I got to see, that if that could happen in that situation, which did seem sort of insane to be writing in that, you know, the conditions, but again, no choice, which was the gift of it, that it could be, if it can happen there, my sense of it was I can experience that anywhere. And I also want to mention that there were times that resistance came up and that wasn't
sure.
there. You know, there. I mean, on a trip like this, you just, There are challenges, physical challenges, yeah. all kinds of things. And when that did happen, when there was huge resistance, and when the takeover happened of mm-hmm. resistance, mm-hmm. there was an acknowledgement of that, and conditioning came right in to criticize that I couldn't get to mm-hmm. happy play. mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But what came in right behind that was the mentor to say, yeah, okay, this is a little scary, this is challenging, and mm-hmm. I wasn't alone. That was the point. And there was that, I think Carrie mentioned that, that Sherry had mentioned that it was in another situation I described, a coaching going on, and that wouldn't it be great to have that any time in life? And that's what I had the gift of experiencing, that, again, practice allowed that to come through in a really tough situation. Yeah. And I guess the term play wouldn't be used in all of it, but enjoy or presence, in the sense of presence being, what's the word I'm looking for? The beauty, I don't know, just the not being alone, that the hand is being held. And what could be more wonderful than that in a really tough situation, you know?
Yeah. Well, and as you say that, you know, it really has, it's fun. It's expanded my kind of, even how I was looking at it, this call has. And as you say that, that presence that's there, which is what allows us to, I got a juggling image as you were talking, you know, that life kind of throws in things that, you know, we didn't know we're going to be there, and yet when we're present, what we know is that we don't know. You know, so
yes.
when we're here, we don't expect life not to throw things into the juggling mix. We know that we don't know. And so with each new thing that comes, it just becomes part of the play, but there's a way in which the play is very big. It doesn't always look like a smile or a relaxed place, but it's present, as you said.
Just came to me as you were saying that it's life's game. You know, we're in the game,
yes.
and the game takes on different characteristics at different times, and that's a play. You know, I mean, playful.
Yeah.
That's a great way to say it, Jen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being with us to share your experience. That was very, very fun. I'm gonna hold that biking image. That's a good one, Jen.
Anyway, thank you, Jen, so much.
All right. Thanks for being with us, Jen. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jan, and thank you, Jen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. Doesn't it kind of make you want to get out your bike and head for the wilds of Canada?
Yeah, look for some rain, some storms.
Yeah, exactly. We're not having any around here, so yeah.
Yes.
That was very fun.
Yes.
And very practice, right? Because, the underlying point is, without practice, I bet a lot of people would not have had that much fun with it.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like without practice, Jan wouldn't have had that much fun with it. So, you know, be concrete, specific there. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I have announcements here unless there's something else you'd like to.
No. I want to hear.
Okay. The powerful There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat offers foundational work in going beyond self-hate that is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important work you will ever do. A retreat is coming up in October.
Uh-huh.
And if you're already meditating in the morning or wish to start, why not enjoy the extra boost of meditating with Sangha? Virtual meditation groups provide 30-minute conference call meditation sessions that include the daily recollection and meditation bells from the monastery. For a full schedule of virtual groups including new group times just added, visit the Virtual Meditation Group's webpage at livingcompassion.org. Bring conscious, compassionate awareness to your Saturday tasks or any project you choose at an at-home working meditation retreat on August 24th. The day includes exercises, facilitated virtual discussions, mindful eating, and designated work periods. And also in August, a six-week conference call retreat in recording and listening training will teach six key skills of the recording and listening practice. We think you will find these calls to be fun, experiential, and transformative. The new class is on Thursdays, beginning August 29th. The Family Karma Retreat in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania is not an exploration of childhood trauma or family dynamics from a content perspective, but rather an investigation of the ego, of the story of me. Through this exploration, we will be able to see how that story dominates us today and will practice the tools needed to transcend ego's control. This retreat, September 2nd through 7th, includes yoga, meditation, and guidance with you, Sherry.
It does.
Yes. And right before that retreat, on Sunday, September 1st, spend an evening with Sherry in York, Pennsylvania, on the topic of practicing in difficult times. For details and for other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org.
Indeed.
And a few reminders for today's show. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Sherry, you can press star 6 and then 1 to make a show and a conversation on one topic of about 5 minutes in length is great. Okay, I think we are ready, Sherry.
All right, let's do this thing.
All right, here we go. First caller, are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Debbie from Minnesota.
Well,
hello,
Debbie.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. So I have a practice question. And I came to everything that you offer through Living Compassion from another tradition that is like more of an energetic tradition and kind of knocked my socks off and leads to a lot of healing and body awareness and intuitive stuff on the body level. And there's this, like, so there's a strong sense of affiliation, and it's got a mantra practice. And when I was at the monastery for the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat recently, it made, like, that tradition kind of, like, surfaced in a pivotal moment and made me sort of question, like, how I'm practicing, and I just felt like I need guidance, because the practices that I've been doing with Living Compassion have been tremendously helpful for me, like enormously helpful for me. And all the guidance I've received through all the various avenues, and yet the way it inserted itself, and it's not the first time this has happened, made me question, like, should I be practicing, like, more mantra? Like, the mantra seems to be in me and with me in a way that affects me so much, and I feel kind of at sea in my practice now. So I'm calling for guidance, and I don't know what you want to say.
So what you're saying is, if I'm with you, so that mantra keeps being in the mind, and you turn attention to it?
Well, it's like, so even if I can call up the mentor, and I can listen to the archives and listen to, you know, do the recording and listening practices, the mantra takes me to a place that, like, it's not about where suddenly, like, all of it feels like noise. And, like, it all feels like noise. And so I'm trying to integrate these two practices because they feel like they're operating on two different levels.
Well, I can guarantee you they're not. However, so that's why I asked the question. How do you practice with the mantra? As you're going around in your day, is attention on the mantra?
Often. Sometimes I'll just,
Yeah. So you hear me often say, I choose unconditional love.
Yeah.
And I encourage people to come up with something like that. You know, I choose peace and joy. I choose presence. Whatever it is. To turn the attention to rather than being caught in conditioned mind. Right?
Yes.
Those are mantras.
Yes. They
are mantras. Mm-hmm. And so the point of that is for us to be training ourselves to bring attention to what we choose, to get it out of conditioned mind and to bring it to where we want attention to be directed, which brings us here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All
of the rest of practice, in the Soto Zen tradition, there are stories about, and the Rinzai tradition too, but there are stories of people who would, guys, because this is, in Japan in the old days, and it wasn't a gal kind of thing. So he would take off from his little village, and he would walk for weeks, if not months, to get to a monastery where he could train. And they wouldn't let him in, right? Because it's not a hostel, right? It's a monastery. So why do you want to come in here? So there are stories of people having their arms cut off because they tried to get through the gate. The gate was slammed on their arm, right? Or the guy who sits out there for 9 years outside the gate waiting to be let in. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, did this happen? You know, Bodhidharma cut off his eyelids so that he wouldn't fall asleep during meditation. Really? I don't know. As far as I know, I wasn't there, right? But the stories are meant to point to a level of sincerity about practice. How badly do you want to wake up and end suffering? How much do you want to live in a deathless reality? How much do you want to do that? Well, these folks were people who really wanted to do that. So then we come to the United States of America in this century or the last century. How much do people want to do that? Well, it's interesting. And, when it's convenient and it doesn't interfere with anything else that's going on, then, I want to do that. And so what's available for people at that level? Well, what's available is beginning to understand what the stakes are, beginning to understand how it works, beginning to understand what is authentic human nature and that which animates or divinity And what is the ego? What is the ego? What is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate? How do we parse that? How do I know? So there are these thoughts in the mind. You know, all Eastern philosophy tells us the mind is just pure imagination. None of it is real. It's an illusion. All of it is an illusion. You look out at the world, and those same folks will say, it's all an illusion. And then people say, what? There's that tree. I can go put my arms around it and hug it. How can you say it's an illusion when I can, okay? And then the same person falls asleep at night, and they dream, and there's somebody else off somewhere having all these adventures that they're having in weird places with people they don't know. They wake up, and they go, oh, wow, that was a dream. But you know, while it was going on, it seemed really real. It seemed like it was, yeah. Well, now look out at your life right now. Does that seem really, well, yeah, it does. Does it seem as real as it did in the dream? Oh, yeah, well, more so. Because I can touch the tree. I didn't try to touch the tree when I was dreaming. Right? So there we are, closing in on what's possible. Okay? It's possible in this lifetime to awaken and end suffering. And most people who have studied any kind of anything about Eastern philosophy know that that's what is taught. Right? It's what is taught in Buddhism. It's what's taught in Hinduism. Right? That's what's possible for us. How many people are doing that? Not a lot. Okay? So are the practices incompatible? No, because they're doing the same exact thing. What you're being helped to do is realize that you want attention on conscious compassion and awareness all the time. Now, you could stop doing Zen awareness practice. And I make you a guarantee, okay? And you could let me know at some point whether this is true. Before long, you would forget all about practicing altogether. You would lose the mantra. You'd go to sleep. And you would wake up somewhere down the road going, holy Toledo, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. You with me?
I'm with you.
Yeah. And when we catch on to the fact that that is ego's bottom line always, the bottom line for ego is quit. Quit paying attention. Quit practicing. Quit doing that. Quit doing that thing that is causing you to want to be present. Quit doing what is supporting you to be present. Just quit. We begin to see that there might be more to it than just an intuitive sensing that it would be nice to do mantra practice.
So in other words, any support, all supports that bring me to presence and take me away from the conditioning are compatible because they're all supporting what I want.
That's exactly right.
I don't have to like do what works and keep doing and stay with Sangha because I need all,
right.
I need everything. Yeah.
That's right. So if you're an alcoholic, okay, if you're an alcoholic and you're new to that realization and somebody took you to an AA meeting, and you can see all these people who quit drinking and they kept drinking, okay? Some of them haven't had a drink in years, right? And inside your little alcoholic head is going to be a story of, yeah, but I don't need this. I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to go. I can do this on my own, right? And then, of course, you know, we realize, actually, I can't. Okay, so I'm going to give these meetings a try, right? And so I go to these meetings, and I haven't had a drink in 3 or 4 months. I'm cruising. I'm good. That's behind me. I got it done. Okay, until I wake up with the world's worst hangover, and then I go back to the meetings. And one day I realize, you know what, I need the support. And the only thing that doesn't want me to have the support is something that wants me to fail.
Right. And so, Sherry, it doesn't, like, you know, as far as, it's, well, you know, it's not about stopping practice. It's about the how of practice. But am I hearing you right that the how, like the how doesn't matter is what you're saying? The how,
well, the how does, the how definitely matters. So, you know, the expression that the person who has themselves as a lawyer has a fool for a lawyer. The person who is in charge of their own awareness practice has a fool for a teacher.
No, no, well, I'm not saying to let go of all teachers. I'm saying that if a tradition sort of was the tradition that initially moved me and kind of keeps inserting itself, does that quote-unquote mean I need to stay with those practices?
Well,
or that's the question.
If you have someone in that tradition who can guide and support your practice, do that.
Well,
but if you're going to
in an energetic way, and yes, but not in a rational way. Not someone who can I can call and I can have a Zen coach and you know and feed the mind like feed the into like so that I know what I'm doing like so that there's
well.
Some, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I know exactly what you're saying. And I will simply say this. I would be very nervous.
Yes.
But
trying to be very... right. Exactly. That's,
because
this helps me feel safe. This helps me feel safe with that energy.
Yes.
With these practices help me. Yes. But I also feel like, am I doing the right practices? Because these other practices are impacting my body giving me shifts in consciousness and all sorts of stuff like that I have to read about to understand.
Well, again,
and there are
my encouragement
there, but it doesn't all make sense in the same way.
My encouragement to you is to if you want to pursue that, find a human being who is in a physical body who can guide you.
Yeah.
Not books, not
right.
You know, not the folks who have a guru who died 500 years ago and speaks to them energetically. No, that is very dangerous. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this helps. Right. Okay. So this is exactly what I. Thank you, Sherry. This is very
you are so
very
welcome.
Yes.
Anytime.
Thank you. Yes. I'm so grateful. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sherry.
Me
too. Thank you, Michael. Okay.
You're welcome.
Thank
okay.
you, Debbie.
Okay.
Take care of yourself.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Debbie. Sherry, what dropped in during that conversation was, as you said, clearly the importance of having someone outside myself who has a broader perspective that can see. I can't see my own mind. That's where I have to get to. I can't see the broader perspective.
Yes. And, you know, when you get to a certain point in practice, it's possible to view everyone and everything as the teacher. But that's only possible for us when we actually can receive guidance, not when we're running all of the information through conditioned mind.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, you have somebody like Mahatma Gandhi. Now, Mahatma Gandhi, I don't know. I've read a lot about the fellow, and I've never known that he had somebody that he talked to regularly. But if you follow his practice, you know, every situation in his life was the teacher.
Yes.
Because he would grapple with it. He would grapple with it until he let go of all of his egocentric ideas and beliefs and assumptions and projections, and he got back to unconditional love. Right? That's what his whole life was devoted to.
Yes. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Oh, goody.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rico.
Hey, Rico.
Hi, boy, that was such a. I'm still standing.
Good man. Well, sit down for this,
I mean,
okay? We're a sitting kind of
really.
A practice. Yeah.
Well. Yeah, so that was so inspiring. To this show was so inspiring, and the last conversation was so inspiring, and just so much to be grateful for. Just this is a gratitude call.
Good.
No,
I like this.
It's like boy, this. It's like the light room or the dark room. Like I am going for the light room. Every breath.
Yes.
And when those voices try to throw a curveball and say, well, you know, it could be, shut up, will you? I remember I have this idea about you go to a movie and it's a really nice, it's an exciting movie or something, and I don't go to the movies very often, but I go to the matinee hoping to have a quiet experience, and this 4 teenagers behind me just gossiping and giggling and chatting on their phones. You turn around, will you guys just shut up?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my relationship with the voices.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, guys,
yeah.
You know,
because they are like those teenagers,
yeah.
Except they're diabolical. Right?
Well, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. They're not. It's not just a matter of unconscious. It's actually ill-intentioned. So,
hate,
yeah.
Self-hate. It's really,
yeah.
And you know what? I have to say, I couldn't quite get my head around that for years and years and years when I first started with Living Compassion. Mm-hmm. But every, like, once a week now, just say, my God, the hatred coming out of this mind.
Yeah.
Still,
yeah.
I mean.
Oh, yeah.
And this
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
So,
well, and that's where, Rico, that's where we are really eager to accept the teaching that that mind is not you.
Hallelujah. Poor.
Yeah.
It'd
right?
be such
because,
a tragedy if it was.
Oh, yeah. And you know it's not. And the proof of that is that you can't actually make it go away. You can't get rid of it. And if it were yours, you could.
Exactly. I'd say, you know, I'm done. Goodbye. Don't bother
yeah.
writing.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. But we can't do that.
Carrie,
no matter what,
well,
it just keeps showing up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Sherry, I have this kind of insight, and that is there was on the good news or the peace quotes, I don't know, maybe a year ago, there was a quote from Byron Katie, and she says, nothing happens to you. Everything happens for you.
Uh-huh.
And
she's right about that.
So, you know, I'm getting on in years. And uh-huh. in my youth, I really traveled a lot. I mean, just, I don't know anyone that's put more miles on them than me.
Uh-huh.
And now, it seems like every few months, another physical limitation comes.
Mm-hmm.
And like now I can't even be outdoors in the sun because I have these really advanced skin conditions and it's like, oh, this is an invitation mm-hmm. to, and I can't walk.
Stay home.
You know, I've got this, right, exactly.
Sit down.
But, exactly.
Yeah.
But It's I can't even sit because I have this like hip degeneration and I'm thinking, oh, well, I can be quiet and follow
mm-hmm.
my breathing and lay down. So
mm-hmm.
I read a book this past winter when I was kind of housebound and it was a story. It was a interview with 13 or 14 Chinese hermits. And it was actually conducted with a translator. This guy, John Blofield, went to a famous mountain that was populated with, over the last centuries, with dedicated practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
And here are these guys who spent 40 years and they didn't go out of this hut.
Mm-hmm.
People mm-hmm. brought them food and everything else and herbs they needed. And I'm thinking, wait a second, why should I complain?
Mm-hmm.
Why should I complain?
Yeah.
I have everything, all the requirements to wake up and end suffering, and I ain't complaining another breath.
That's right. And not only that, Rico, it's not like you missed anything, right? Yeah, I mean, you got to go and do and have and be everything you wanted for decades, right? And now,
hallelujah.
What is the gift for you now? Well,
what do they say in Star Wars?
Learning.
The final frontier.
Right, learning to stay.
Right. And so I know you always have a soft spot in your heart for Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh.
I do.
And he used to say to us, I mean, I heard this 100 times. I spent a lot of hours sitting in front of him, and he would say over and over, I encourage you with as much enthusiasm and support you can muster to chase every single fantasy and dream and idea you have. Because then and only then will you realize none of that can actually really, really give me what I'm hankering for.
That's
they're all like cul-de-sacs and false starts and dead ends and side trips and it's exactly true. I don't think I could be so happy to be housebound without having chased all those dreams and adventures and
because this is my projection onto that each one of those helped you see a little bit clearer what actually made you happy. So we think, oh, well, going there, that'll make me happy. And you go there, and you actually have a sense of happiness. Okay? And then you want that thing, and you get that thing, and there's a sense of happiness. Right? Now, quickly, it'll be followed by disappointment. That's ego's contribution. Right? But in that initial, you know, I always wanted to see the northern lights. And there they are. I'm here. I'm seeing them, right? And there's this feeling that rises up in us, right? And my projection is that's the whole point. With everything that it is that we want, when we let ourselves have that, we realize what the feeling is, the experience is that we're actually going for. And we begin to realize it's inside me. It's not out there in that stuff. I'm never going to be able to accumulate or chase down enough of that stuff out there to give me this feeling that I have inside that is always already there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing that I've come to see is what was fueling this drive to go and seek and explore and to accumulate experiences and adventures and tall tales to tell the grandchildren was, I don't want to call it the demons, but that's not such a far cry. It's like just there was such an innate fear. And fear of what? Well, there's plenty of reasons for a young kid to be afraid. But it was just this angst and this fear. And another thing Rajneesh said that you would probably appreciate, he says, don't just do something, sit there. And that would be a great hat to wear, right? Don't just do something, sit there. And now I had a pretty exciting experience 8 months ago, and I came as close to an exit as you could, and I realized, wow, that's really not anything to be afraid of. So, wow, now let's just relax into this vast now, and little fear comes up. Okay, wow, isn't that wonderful? We're still alive to experience fear.
Oh, yes, and to practice what's here that is what you truly want and what you want to be able to learn to dissolve into, so that everything that is not that does not trouble you. So that as you make your transition, there's not going to be something pulling on your shirt sleeve or whispering something terrifying in your ear, because you know who you are and you know where you're headed, which is where you've always been.
So I think as two Californians, we should maybe put a subtext to that word transitioning, because a lot of people don't know what we mean. Californians know we're trans, but it's like
we're making the big transition out of the house.
The big jump. Well, there it is.
Yeah.
So the other thing that strikes me is I live alone, and my sidekick is an 8-year-old fat Russian blue cat who I saved from euthanasia at the very, very last minute. And you know what? He's a great teacher, because he's not grateful.
No.
You know, he never wags his tail and says, oh, boy, it's feeding time. It's like he has this look. You know,
can I chip
you
in?
Know, what do you, will you
nothing. Can I just, do the dishes?
Will you just feed me and quit this, like, affection business? Oh, this is called giving without any acknowledgement or reward or anything. Well, so the other day I tried to rub him a little bit, and he turned on me and he scratched me. And it's like I'm on this special medication, blood medication, bleeding and bleeding and bleeding. And I just said, oh, thank you for showing me that it's time for me to relearn respecting your boundaries. Another time I went, you damn, you darning grateful cat, I'm gonna throw a shoe at you.
Yeah, you could also add, and I'll be respecting your boundaries outside, because you're now an outside cat.
He is an outside cat. But it's like everything has shifted. Like I remember St. Francis when I was a little kid. He was my hero. It wasn't the baseball players, the football players. It was St. Francis. And he just said, oh, thank you, Lord. Teach me how to love. Everything, everything. Teach me how to love. Teach me how to love. So, Sherry, you
there
have
he is.
Helped
He's
me.
Teaching you to love.
Right. But anyway, Sherry, this is a gratitude call. And,
well, thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm
good to hear from you.
I know, but it's like
always glad,
Sherry,
when you
thank you.
Remind us that you're with us.
I don't know when I'm not traveling much, but you know I'm here. And
As
happy I say to
that.
People, how you doing? My friends say, how you doing? I said, well, I ain't dead yet.
And that's right. And I'm happy to be here. So it's a good combo.
Hallelujah.
All right. Take care of him,
Thank
Rico.
You, Thank you, all Michael. Right. Thank you, Bye-bye. Everybody, and always.
You're welcome.
You. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rico. And Sherry, we are going to hear from our Zen Awareness Coaching Program, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
All right.
Build compassionate discipline into your life with Zen Awareness Coaching. Weekly calls and email check-ins provide support and accountability for waking up and ending suffering. Coaching assists us to recognize conditioned patterns and direct attention to what we want for our lives instead. If you have ever attended a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, Zen Awareness Coaching is for you. To request a coach, email zenawarenesscoach@livingcompassion.org. Get a Zen Awareness Coach and choose to make a change for good for your practice and your life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Karen.
Hello, hey, Karen.
Hi. I was just munching away on a kale salad, so I am sorry. I have to finish this one little bite. So as soon as I put it in my mouth, I thought, oh, I'm going to get unmuted right now. What was I thinking? But anyway, I too am happy to be here, and I'm feeling very grateful. And what I was looking at is that I set this week aside, like I told people, I'm having a quiet week of practice. That's what I'm devoting my life to this week. And I'm working on a little project, a little monastery project, and that I just hadn't gotten to, and I wanted to do that, and just wanted to have a week of practice and kind of staying home and settling down.
God, that sounds good. I want to do that.
I know.
Yeah.
And it's a very sweet experience, and I remember being at the monastery doing a project once and having the sense of life was doing the project. And that just dropped in as I was working on this project. You know, I mean, in a sense, life is always doing the project, but it just that there was a conscious awareness of it.
Yeah, and it's so much happier when we're not getting in the way all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, in this settling down, I got an email yesterday from the monastery, and I had asked quite a long time ago, I'd sent an email off to come to the monastery, and I just thought I never heard back, and I thought, gosh, should I write again? No, I think they would have said if I could come. Well, then yesterday in this is my practice week, I got an email from the monastery that said, okay, gave me instructions for coming this Saturday. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, and there was this.
Let me go back to my old email.
Oh, that's exactly what I
did. Did I miss something?
There it was. It was like a month ago that I got, there was an email that I missed. I had no idea.
Wow.
And then, I have things I have to put in place and plan and, you know, animals and things, you know, I have to kind of make arrangements.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just pack a little overnight bag and hop in the car.
Yeah. And it's summertime and not, you know, people have plans and stuff and to, you know, that, but anyway, everything has fallen into place. And that feels like life. You know, that just feels like life is paving the way, because when I got that email yesterday, I thought, oh my gosh, like, okay, I'm going to do everything I can. But I really did mess up. You know, I really missed that very important email. And so anyway, there's just been.
And that's okay, right?
Yeah.
That's okay.
You
missed it? Okay, well, here you are now. And all right, well, there'll be a little flurry of activity here, and we hope it's all going to work out, and it probably will, and it's exciting.
I know, it is exciting. I mean, everything's in place now, so, you know, unless life decides that I can't come for some reason, or, you know, unless there's something else that happens on the way, it looks like the path is
you're set.
So just feeling a lot of gratitude and and then a lot of gratitude and a lot of, I guess that's it, gratitude for just having this week of practice, and then gratitude for practice just swooping in the way that it did. So, anyway.
You know, this is slightly off. This, I love that story. That's a lovely story, and it reminds me of to say something to people that, you know, we're a very, as you well know, we're a very small organization with really a pretty small number of people who make everything happen. And so if somebody, if you don't hear back, it's okay to write again. You know, it's so not sure you got my email requesting to, just in case anything changes, I'm still available for the, we are not offended by people reminding us of things.
Yes. Yeah, and I feel the same way for getting reminded. I do know what. There were a lot of assumptions. There were a lot of assumptions. That's what was happening. That's why I didn't write again. And
right, which is a killer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because there's the voice in the head, you know. Oh, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they probably, they got some, and they just didn't need. And it's also kind of calm and quiet and logical and reasonable. It just doesn't occur to us to say, I don't know that.
No, I know. No.
It doesn't.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is good to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very helpful to see.
All of whatever the beliefs and assumptions were completely untrue. And and the problem with those, I think a lot of times is, for me anyway, is that I don't know that that's what I'm acting out of. And
Yes, we don't. We are just so accustomed to living in conditioned mind, and most of the time, or a great deal of the time, nothing startles us awake, you know. And we just go then you go through day after day after day, and everything, you know, it's all pretty much. And so we're not getting information that says, you know, all that stuff that's going on in there, you don't actually know that any of that's true. And when something happens, not something like this where you need to pack up and go away for a week, but just in the, you know, I'm going to get my car serviced, and then you drive there and you have the appointment on the wrong day. Those kinds of things don't register as, you know, you really can't trust that conversation that's going on in your head. That's not what happens. You know, either we get chastised for not paying attention. Well, why didn't you look it up? Well, why didn't you check? Well, I think they made a mistake, and then they're just acting like they didn't. And, you know, so all that activity and conditioned mind goes on to cover up the fact that it actually doesn't know what's going on. And it's just basically doing a low-level hypnosis with us all the time.
Yeah. Boy, yes. Yeah, I can really see that. And where I would go, you know, that, I mean, I haven't, that when I have those sorts of things happen, I don't show up for something that I would have loved to have shown up for, whatever, there's a, you know, that I can go into the, what would be the distracting conversation, you know, just the sense of disappointment, and then a looking,
yeah,
at, how did that happen?
Well, and what's wrong with you? How did you do that? What were you, yeah.
Yeah. Like,
rather
like
than
trying to figure out how I goofed up. And,
yeah. Rather than realizing, you know, mind that I assume is me and I'm counting on to make things happen for me, you are untrustworthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh, what freedom there would be if we could actually get that.
Yeah.
You are untrustworthy. I won't say your intentions are always nefarious, but gosh, they seem to be a lot of the time. And most of the, and of course, you don't know what's going to happen because nobody knows what's going to happen in the future. And why am I listening to you? And worse than that, why am I believing you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're saying is it's just, it's all unconscious. There's just
yes.
It's unconscious that that's what I'm listening to.
Yep.
And that's what
yep.
I'm following around in life. And when you were reflecting all that, what it reminded me of is walking into the dining hall at the monastery with my outdoor shoes on, or walking out
yes.
not putting my outdoor shoes on. It's just
yeah.
there's that unconsciousness, and that's I think what
yeah.
I love about being there is that you're constantly turned back to wake up, you know, to
yeah.
how you. And and thank you, because I'm going to just look at that now as, wow, I was just unconscious and listening to a voice in my head or listening
yeah.
to a conversation.
And
that's all.
The thing is, it seems innocuous.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm just going along, just me thinking, just little topics, just dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee along through life. And to really get it that, yeah, but I'm being manipulated.
Yeah.
You know, as a lot of that little newsletter article, I'm being talked. I'm being
yeah.
talked. And I have a habit of listening and doing what that says. And so maybe it is innocuous. And maybe I can go through day after day after day, and nothing really happens as a result of it that I can tell, except that I am being controlled and manipulated by that just... that
yeah.
hypnotic suggestion that's always in there. And sooner or later, I'm going to pay a big price for it, which
yeah.
we know because we
yeah.
have
yeah.
any number of times in our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just one last thing about that. What I'm hearing in all this is that when there is that coming to consciousness and going, oh, I've been listening to a conversation in my head, that can be the end of it. There doesn't need to be any looking back.
That's right.
Seeing what I did.
That's
how
right.
did that happen? All the investigation,
right.
the you know, the shame of it, the disappointment. There doesn't need to be
yep.
any of that.
Nope. Just thank you.
Yeah.
Here I am.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, good.
Good. Well, I it sounds like I'll see you soon.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Thanks,
okay.
Karen.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Karen. And that was another fabulous conversation, Sherry. And in the interest of time, I'm going to bring on our next caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Terry. I was at the last There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat. And I'm
well,
so
hello there.
I just want to say to the previous caller, you're in for a treat. It's the most amazing experience I've ever had.
Uh-huh.
I wish it were longer.
yes. It's funny, isn't it, Terry? Because we start off and it's like, oh, no. You know, I'm sure I was kidding on the last night of the retreat when I was with all of you about how surprised I am when anybody ever makes it because of the level of resistance that people run into trying to get to that retreat. And then,
yeah.
you know, resistance, and then fall in love, never want to go home.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I totally had all that resistance, and I made myself go, and I just, it was wonderful. Really, the facilitator
yeah.
was just amazing. Amazing program.
It
I have
is,
a.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Huh? Oh, my God, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I can't wait to come back. I'm going to do another retreat there. I'm looking forward
Good.
To going back again. It's wonderful.
Good. You are
so
welcome.
When I left, so going there was a challenge for me, just driving there by myself and. Like you were talking to the previous caller, you know, I got my car serviced, did all those checks and balances, drove up over the grapevine, which always scares me, went up there, went camping afterwards by myself, and I was really sharp and clear after the retreat. I could really see how things were working in my mind and my thoughts, and I could kind of redirect and disidentify pretty quickly. When it was like, no, not too big of stuff. But coming back on the drive, when I encountered, you know, going up over the grapevine again, just the, these a couple of big things that I'm afraid of came in, and I was completely unable to distance myself from that, like, vice clamp of fear that just gripped my chest. Just I tried, and like, this is not working. I can't stand back from this and look at this. I tried all the little ways that I've been working with the tools, and they just did not operate at that moment. And then I came back, and I had another, my kids wanted to go backpacking, so we went on this other very steep switchback drive up 6,000 feet up into the High Sierra. And I agonized over that for 3 days, just worrying about it, trying to change the trailhead, trying to talk them into going to a different way. At the same time, telling myself, no, but you need to do this and face these things and don't shrink your world. Like, I got your book on fear, so I was working with that. And I did do it. I did it. I did all these things. But at the moment of the fear, at that level of, like, kind of terror, I just couldn't see it as separate. And it seemed very personal, and it seemed like whatever voices of comfort didn't seem nearly as strong or able to protect. This voice of fear just seems so powerful.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it is. And my encouragement to you is just to keep practicing. Because that fear has been able to paralyze you and make you miserable for a really long time. And the voices of comfort and reassurance that in that level of fear, that's new to try that. And so, of course, you know, my whole thing is, you know, just put one earbud in. Just one earbud with that soothing, it's okay, you're all right, just keep breathing, it's fine. Nothing wrong, nothing going on here. I'm right here with you. We're fine. It's good. All right. There. Good. Just keep breathing. If you need to pull over and take a break, it's okay. It's all right. Whatever you need to do, you're fine. You're doing a great job, right? All the way up the mountain, right? Or wherever it is that you're going. And that you get used to having that voice talking to you, and you get used to turning your attention to that instead of those voices of terror that want to come into your head and really endanger you, right? Because that what those voices are doing to you is not helping you. It's not protecting or taking care of you. It's really endangering you because you know, your chest is gripped with an icy hand. You can't breathe. You can't pay attention. You know, it's a dangerous place to be. And so to
And they definitely shrinking my world. I mean, like you say in your book, you know, if I listen to those voices, my world shrinks. Yeah. And I like outdoors activities, and I don't want to shrink my world.
That's right. Well, let me give you one. I don't think it couldn't be in the book because it happened as a result of the book. But I got a letter a few years ago from this woman who was 72 at the time, and she was terrified of bridges and tunnels. And so she was studying the fear book, and she was, you know, she was working with it. She was doing the, you know, the equivalent of going up in the elevator, you know, if you're afraid of heights or whatever those things are. And after she practiced, she drove from the border with Mexico all the way to the border of Canada, up the West Coast. And she had the fear book open beside her. And she actually did this before recording and listening. Okay, but she had it beside her. Whenever she needed to, she would pull over and she would just breathe and talk to herself and reassure herself, and then she'd get back on the road, and she made the whole trip. She was so excited.
Yeah, I took your book backpacking, and I read it up in the High Sierra. It got dropped in a river. It's a little wet, but it dried out, and it's a little puffier now. I have one quick question. I know I'm running at the end, but in your book it says one thing that kind of questioned me. I'm like, oh, am I hopeless? It says, it is not possible for a self that feels separate from life to be unafraid. So part of me interpreted that as, if I don't wake up to this illusion of the fact that this separation, I'm never going to be able to overcome my fear. Am I interpreting that wrong?
Yes. Happily, okay. Yes. It's a true statement, but the work that you're doing is reinforcing the fact that intuitively you know you are not separate. Because what you're looking to in order to help you, to assist and comfort you and reassure you, is non-separation. It's the intelligence that animates all. So you really are, at this point, turning to life with a capital L. You're turning to life as your support and sustenance. And that's an experience of non-separation.
Okay. And that might just take some time.
Oh, absolutely. And you're doing it right now. You're practicing it right now. Right? And it's the same process. You're backpacking at elevation. And so you know, you didn't just one day strap on a backpack and go up to 6,000 feet and dash off to camp for a few days, right?
Right.
You had to build up to it. You had to get stronger. You had to build stamina and endurance and that sort of thing. And it's exactly the same process spiritually. And you do it in exactly the same way.
Okay.
Yeah?
I'm glad you answered that, because it had me a little worried, like, oh, if I don't, quote, wake up, unquote, I'm never going to get over going to be able to manage fear.
That's right. And so the thing to remember is you are waking up. Don't let conditioned mind turn it into you just have to have all the lights come on one day and then you're home free and that's the end of it. You are waking up. And if you consider, you are far, far, far more awake than you were even 6 months ago.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah, thank
you. Don't you think?
I think so. I've been working with some of these issues for a long time. But it's new. Yeah. I'm doing new practices, and I'm keeping on. I guess that's the point.
That's right.
I'm keeping on.
That's right. That is exactly it. And you are more relaxed and more confident than you were. You have a better relationship with Terry.
Yeah.
And you're committed. This is all part of the process of waking up. So you're on the trail.
You know, and it's really interesting, too, that, you know, you all go through these hurdles and you, like, do these things which are, oh, I did it. And conditioned mind really doesn't give you too much credit for that.
None.
When you get back, because it's not like, wow, that was awesome. Like, look what you did. It's like, not much. Like, it'll say a whole lot about the weaknesses, but it's not too congratulatory on the successes.
That is exactly right. And so that's why we don't want to give it any attention. We want to give attention to what supports and nurtures us, and none to what is criticizing us and really hoping for our failure, pushing us toward failure if it can. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for the program of the retreat. It's amazing.
Oh, good. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I look forward to seeing you up there again before long.
I will. Thank you very much, Sherry. I appreciate it. Michael, thank you.
You're welcome.
Take care. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Terry. And another blockbuster conversation and fabulous show, Sherry. So thank you.
I'm telling you. How come we're so lucky, Michael? We get to have
it's
this
good
time,
time
all the time. All right. Living right. Thank you, sir.
Living right. Thank you. Go happy.
You
don't forget to treasure yourself.
Exactly. Oh, thank you for that one. Yes, treasure ourselves. All right. Good night.
All right. Good night.